This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, I'm back again. Sadie's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back.
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, we get ready for the NBA Finals with Game 5 coming up tonight. Plus, we give our breakdowns, speaking of basketball, of the new sports movie, Hustle, Adam Sandler's basketball film that's out on Netflix now if you haven't seen it already. We'll give our thoughts on that. And plus, also, we'll probably touch just to spend a moment on the Stanley Cup in the NHL because it's pretty interesting what's going on in hockey, especially if you haven't been paying attention to hockey just yet. We'll get to that coming up. Plenty more to do here in the final hour. And the biggest storyline from Game 4 of the NBA Finals that doesn't have to actually do with any of the shots being made. Get to that coming up. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcast. And you can always get in touch with the show online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Click on our show page. Leave a comment for the show there. On Twitter, at Morrow Middays. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734, or join the conversation on the phones, 843-721-9500. We're going to talk a little Hollywood coming up with Sandler's new movie, Hustle. Unfortunately, I just saw some sad news out of Hollywood that the great actor, Philip Baker Hall, passed away last night at the age of 90. Now, if you're not familiar with the name, as soon as you Google him, you'll recognize him. He's been in so many movies over the years. Good actor. He was in Boogie Nights. I know him, of course, from Seinfeld. He was a bookman. He was the detective at the library trying to track down overdue books in Seinfeld way back when. He was in The Zodiac. He's been in everything. So he was almost 91, a few months shy of 91, passed away last night. Great actor, though. He was in Argo. That's a good film. He was a good character actor. So anyways, we'll talk about the new basketball film coming up, but Philip Baker Hall, that's the breaking news out of Hollywood, unfortunately passed away overnight at age 90. With that, transitioning to the NBA Finals Game 4 from Friday. By the way, the Morrow Midday Show has really nailed the NBA Finals, if I do say so myself. We talked about it last hour, but Trent nailed the player props for Game 4. Keep your fingers crossed, knock on wood. Hopefully it continues tonight with Game 5. And we were both on the Warriors winning. They won. They covered. They won outright. They were an underdog. They won outright. And just along the way, the one thing I've gotten wrong was I thought the Warriors would win Game 1. After that, on the show of the four games, I've been 3-1 in terms of the spread. Here's an interesting trend. We'll break down Game 4, a preview Game 5 in a moment. Here's an interesting trend for those that may be interested when it comes to the NBA Finals. Since 2011, so it's a pretty large sample size, when the point spread is 6 points or fewer, the outright winner of the NBA Finals game has covered the spread 67 consecutive times. So what does that mean? Well, let's break it down. When the point spread is 6 points or fewer, whoever wins the game covers the spread. So what that means is, for example, tonight, the Warriors are favored by 4. If you think the Warriors are going to win the game tonight, you might as well take them to cover the spread, because a team favored by 4 has not won by less than 4 in over 11 years in the NBA Finals. The flip side is, if you think the Celtics are going to win tonight, or if you like the Celtics plus 4, just take them to win outright. Because again, same idea. We haven't had a game under 4 points when a team's favored by 4, if you get what I'm saying. Right? So the team that wins the NBA Finals, they're 66-0-1 against the spread when it's less than 6 points since 2011. So if you think the favorite's going to win, just take them to cover. And if you like the underdog with the points, just take them to win outright, because that's usually what's going to happen. So if you're a betting man, there's my little advice tonight. If you like the Celtics, just take them to win outright. Forget the 4. And if you like the Warriors, don't forget the money line. Just bet them with the better odds to cover the 4. Anyways, Game four was Friday night. The Warriors even the series. And it was all because of Steph Curry's phenomenal performance. Let me bust out my tears of clutchness once again. It's something that I often refer to on the Morrow Midday Show, especially when we talk about moments like this. And the top tier are the greatest to ever do it, and they get even better in the big spots. Think Michael Jordan and Mariano Rivera. The next tier would be great players that become all-time greats in big moments. Curt Schilling and Fernando Valenzuela, a couple of pitchers that come to mind. Then you have great players that continue to be great. Kobe Bryant, Derek Jeter, they were just consistent. Then you have the not really good players, but they were really clutch in big moments. And that'd be like Eli Manning and Nick Foles, and in baseball, Louis Soho. And then at the very bottom, the lowest level of clutch, you have good players, maybe even great players, that disappear in the big spots, that don't come through when you need them. And for a long time, that was Peyton Manning, and then he finally won a couple of Super Bowls. Right, Alex Rodriguez, even a Paul George has that reputation of coming up small in the big spots. And Greg Maddux kind of has that reputation. Now, Maddux pitched well in the playoffs, but his numbers were better in the regular season than they were in the postseason. Still pitched pretty well, still a good pitcher in the playoffs, but was always better in the regular season than the playoffs. Guys that were great players, but when you needed them most in the big spots, they didn't always come through for you. And that's what makes a great player. It's not so much what you do in the regular season or even necessarily what you do in the first round. Jason Tatum and the Celtics, right, they swept Kevin Durant in the first round. That's all great. But when you play poorly in the NBA Finals, that's what we will remember more than what you did against an 8 seed in the first round. And so I reiterate my levels of clutchness because as I look back at Game 4, and I see what Curry did in the second half, and I see what Jason Tatum did in the second half, to me, that's the big difference. Now, look, Curry is more experienced. He's played in more of these games. He's had a better career. Maybe it should be expected. But if you're going to feed me the superstar conversation about Jason Tatum, then I would say he needs to perform like a fellow superstar, Steph Curry. And if you're going to tell me also that Steph Curry still has something to prove and he needs that MVP in order to solidify his resume or his accomplishments, well, then I think Curry answered the call really throughout the series, but especially in Game 4, and Jason Tatum did not. He did not step up to the plate when everybody's been pumping him up as one of the best players in the league. And in that second half of Game 4, that was the difference, right? Steph Curry, for a lot of the second half, took over. I mean, he was great. Scored 43 points. Did it on the road with the team's backs against the ropes, trailing in the series, coming off a bit of an ankle injury the game prior. Goes out there, scores 43 points, was fantastic. And on the flip side, Jason Tatum kind of disappeared. On his home floor, a chance to put away the NBA Finals for all intents and purposes. And the Warriors outscored the Celtics by 15 in the second half in Boston. Curry scored another 20 points in the second half, and Jason Tatum made two baskets after halftime. That's the big difference between the two. Tatum shows the potential. He has flashes, plays well after a loss. It's like a shutdown pitcher in baseball. Team's on a losing streak. Now you got to turn to your ace, and hopefully he can shove for a few innings and carry you to a much-needed victory. Tatum has that type of personality, or at least has shown that in the postseason this year. When they lose and they need to come back with a better performance, right, he goes out there and he plays well, averaging over 30 points after a loss. But he has not played well in the second half of the playoffs. He's not shot well in the fourth quarter. And when the Celtics were looking for their star in Game 4, because this time of year it's about the stars, you can't rely on Al Horford scoring 26. Game 4 of the NBA Finals, you're leading in the second half at home, right, Jason Tatum has to make the plays. He made two baskets in the second half. The Warriors outscored the Celtics by 15, and Steph Curry went for 43. Third most points in a finals victory since Jordan. Curry was like one of, I think it's 15 players, maybe even fewer than that, that actually scored over 42 points in a finals game ever. And in terms of guys who have done it on the road, second half of an NBA Finals, right, games 4 through 7, on the road, scoring over 40 points, not a lot of guys that have done that either, especially in a win like Steph Curry did on Friday. That was one of the better performances we've seen in the finals in years. Again, third most points scored in a finals victory in the last 25 years. The other two were Iverson, the one game that the Sixers won in the finals 20 years ago. He went for 48 points in game one and was fantastic, but then the Sixers got swept after that. It was a gentleman's sweep. And Giannis had 50 points last year as they went on to win, and that was a remarkable performance. And then you have Steph Curry Friday night. And especially if the Warriors go on to win this series, I mean, that was the turning point. You lose that game, you lose the series. You're down 3-1. I don't care if you're heading back home. You're done. Now the Warriors win that game. Suddenly they become the favorites once again. They're favored in Vegas now to finish out this series. And game five tonight at home, of course, will be huge. But it was a remarkable game Friday night from Curry. Look, he got some help finally. Klay Thompson had some big threes. Andrew Wiggins was fantastic. He had a career-high number of rebounds. Not postseason career-high. Career-high for any game he's ever played. I thought he played really well. Finally used his athleticism, his length, his size on the glass. He could do a very good job rebounding. Doesn't always do it. He did Friday night. Draymond Green is pretty worthless out there. Seems like at this point he's kind of in his head. He didn't want to shoot the ball in the second half Friday night, kept passing it. They benched him at the end of the game. I thought rightfully so. They used Looney more, which was good. I've been calling for more playing time. He's played well. But Steph Curry, of course, is the big story. He was fantastic. On the flip side, Jason Tatum, not so much. Now let's hear from J.J. Redick this morning from Get Up as he was talking about both guys. First, for Steph Curry, it's funny, regardless of what Curry has accomplished, people are still saying, right, we need that defining moment. We need that NBA Finals MVP for Steph Curry. Was Friday night a defining moment for Curry? Here's what Redick said this morning.
I absolutely think so. And when you look at the context of this, the Warriors essentially being out of this stage for 2 years, him not winning a Finals MVP yet, and clearly being the best player in this series, and then the context of going against this Celtics defense, which, as we know, was the number one defense in the league this season and looked so stout through three rounds of the playoffs so far. And what he's done against this defense is nothing short of remarkable. And I just want to comment on that Klay Thompson quote, which I love. And what Klay is talking about there is competitive stamina. And to me, that's what separates the greats from the all-time greats. And Steph has competitive stamina in spades.
That was Redick this morning about Steph Curry. Yeah, I made the case Friday even before Game 4. I said if this series goes seven games, Curry's my MVP, win or lose. That's how good he's been. He's scoring twice as many points as any of his teammates, and the highest scorer on the Celtics is Jaylen Brown, less than 22. Curry's at 34. He's been far and away the best player. He's been the most consistent player this series. He's when he gets help around them, that's when they win, like Game 4. But otherwise, Steph Curry is kind of a man amongst boys with the way he's been playing. He's shooting 50% from beyond the arc, and you know a Steph Curry 3 is not a normal 3. He had a couple of threes Friday that should have been and ones. They weren't blowing the whistle. Got knocked down, still made the shots. That Friday night performance was truly remarkable from Steph Curry on the road in the finals. Game 5 tonight, obviously it's the huge swing game, and for the Celtics, you got to get more out of Jason Tatum. You know Steph Curry, their star is going to show up. Your star, if you're Boston, needs to show up. Here is J.J. Redick, and then you'll hear from Vince Carter in the second half of this clip, breaking down Jason Tatum and what he needs to do moving forward to be that star for the Celtics starting with Game 5 tonight.
It's actually pretty simple. He just needs to make some two-pointers. He's been awful shooting two-pointers in this series. And I think some of it is taking advantage of his size. Some of it is slowing down and just making the right read. At times, I think he's getting sped up and he's driving into no man's land with no real plan. You know, that graphic showed his second half numbers. How about the fourth quarter? He's 4-for-16 in the fourth quarter in this series. Just really poor play on the offensive end, shooting the basketball for him in the second half in this series.
Vince, what advice coming out of halftime does Jason need to take to actually change this momentum?
J.J. said it, aggressive getting to the close to the basket, working your way inside out. You know, don't settle for those tough twos and slow down a little bit. You know, sometimes being aggressive now, setting someone else up will help you maybe two or three plays later because they've seen that play before and they know you'll make the right play. So for Jason, just be aggressive, but get close to the basket first, then work your way out to twos and to the threes. I think sometimes he settled. A couple of times we saw last game, he saw Bielitsa. He tried to take him off the dribble, plays great defense, and then settles for a tough two instead of just getting in the paint, maybe getting off the ball because they try to help off of Bielitsa when they see that mismatch.
Vince Carter and J.J. Redick this morning breaking things down for Tatum moving forward. Last nine games, Tatum's shooting 38%. In the NBA Finals, he's 2 of 17 from mid-range. And he disappeared in the second half when they needed him most Friday night. Look at the end of the game. He took one shot in the last 6 minutes. It was a lot of Smart, Brown, Horford, even White. No, you need your start. Steph Curry on the other side, he's the one taking the shots. They're getting him the ball, specifically. Jason Tatum wasn't taking the shots for Boston. He needs to play better. I imagine he'll play better tonight. But he needs to be that big star if the Celtics want to try to take the lead back in this series. The Warriors are favored by 4. Boston's better on the road. They're really good after losses. But we talked last hour about just having that feel, just going like your gut instinct. My feeling is that I think the Warriors win tonight. And the Celtics lose back-to-back games for the first time in weeks. And I think the Warriors win tonight and take a 3-2 lead. With how they played Friday, and now they're back home. Momentum doesn't seem to be much of a thing in the playoffs, but the Warriors do have any momentum that there may be on their side. The home crowd will be going crazy. They've been here before. We saw the inexperience at the end of Game 4 from Boston. The Celtics are very good in this spot, coming off a loss, especially even having to go on the road. But I just think the Warriors win again tonight, and Curry gives us another big performance. By the way, as I said, one of the biggest storylines to come out of Game 4 may not have anything to do with any of the shots that were taken on the floor. Instead, it was the shots from the camera of people in the crowd. Trent, did you see this story the Curry parents?
Yeah, I did, and I read up a little bit on it. Obviously, it's all speculation, right? But if you want to dive into it a little more, Luke, but the evidence between the Curry family and this apparent new family is rather damning.
Yeah, it's interesting. If you're not familiar what we're talking about, I noticed this because they showed Dell when Steph made a big, I think it was like a three. Steph Curry made a nice play. They go to the crowd and they show Dell, and it's like the last 2 minutes of the game, and he hugs this woman that's with him, this blonde-haired woman with him. And I thought, oh, that must be the new girlfriend, which I thought it's a little awkward. Like Curry's mom is there with her new boyfriend.
Right.
Curry's dad is there. They're sitting at like opposite ends.
Well, remember when he broke the 3-point record and they were in Manhattan at Madison Square Garden?
Yep.
Dell had three ladies with
That's
him,
true.
And Sonya was with the grandkids, and so it was very interesting dynamic.
Yeah. So I didn't think much of it. I just thought like, oh, that's the new lady. All right.
Right.
Good for Dell. But then the internet is amazing and what people can do. So, long story short, as we get into a little Page 6 gossip here, like we're TMZ.
Yes.
You may recall the Curry family, because the Currys were like the all-wholesome basketball family. Everybody loved them. They were at all the games. The parents, right, seemed great. Steph Curry seems like a great guy. He loves his parents. They're all family people. Well, anyways, the Currys have gotten divorced, and it got kind of ugly. It was a bit of an ugly divorce, and they don't seem to be on good terms. So, the reports were that they were both kind of cheating on one another, but Mrs. Curry was with somebody during the marriage, and that somebody was Steve Johnson, who played briefly in the NFL with the Patriots. He went to college the same time as the Currys did, and so he's known the Currys since college, and I think was like friends with Dell, I think originally.
Oof.
And now that's the new boyfriend of Mrs. Curry. So then fast forward, we get to Game 4 of the NBA Finals Friday night. Mrs. Curry is there, or maybe she's going by her maiden name, whatever she's being referred to as. She's there with her new boyfriend, the Steve Johnson. We then get this shot of Dell Curry with his new apparent girlfriend. Again, I thought, nothing much to this. Whatever. Then those on the internet found that Dell Curry's new girlfriend is the ex-wife of Mrs. Curry's new boyfriend.
Whoa.
So it's like a wife swap, essentially.
Yeah, it's strange. It's very strange. And right, when you see the camera cut, you're just like, oh, that's Dell with his new fling. Attaboy, you know, dude, good job. And then Miss Sonya, you know, when you cut to her, it's like, that's her new fling. Oh, that's cool. And then 10 minutes later on Twitter, you go to Twitter and they're trending immediately. And people have already found out that the new couple had a previous relationship.
Yes. So you have two divorced couples that then just now are with one another. The ex-wife and ex-husband, right? You're cross-contaminating here. So now the question becomes, this is what everyone's wondering, and this is the hot talk of Monday here on Sports Talk with everything else going on. Is this Dell just simply trying to get back at those two? Or was there a situation where when they were married, they were already kind of co-mingling with one another, right?
Yeah.
Maybe a little swinger situation. I don't know.
Whoa.
And now here we are. Or is this just simply Dell saying like, okay, you're going to date him? well, his ex-wife is available. I'm going to start dating her. Get back at you guys.
Well, Luke, I think when we look back at the MSG game where Curry broke that record, that was a smack in the mouth to Sonya. Smack in the mouth. Bringing three ladies, parent, very young model types, you know, to the game, sitting courtside, grandkids in the stands at the opposite end. That's not great. Probably go see your grandkids, Dale. That might be a better look. And I'll also point out the Curry family used to come to Wild Dunes. Great people, absolutely love all of them. They're awesome, but I would not be surprised if this was a you know, swing in the bat type of situation, Luke. That's where I'm kind of leaning towards all of this, because we don't know. These people got all this kind of money in the world. We have no idea how they operate, but I would, with my little knowledge of the Curry family and interacting with them, I could see you know, swing in a home run here.
I think this is Dell just trying to get payback, right? Just being petty, if you will, and saying, like, okay, if you two are going to start dating, well, your ex-wife's available. I'm going to start dating her.
You think they all sat down at dinner and said, all right, this is how this is going to work, you know, and just kind of worked it out, and they wouldn't say anything to the public because they haven't talked to the media. You know, we don't hear anything from Dell or Sonya, so I have no idea.
Imagine that dinner now if they sit, because I imagine they're not on good terms.
Whoa.
The four of them get around for a dinner.
Somebody sneak a camera in that room.
Seriously.
Please.
Yeah. And I do feel for Steph because, I mean, you know, the family drama is playing out in front of everybody. And he's just trying to win an NBA Finals. He's just going about his business.
Yeah, at the games. And by the way, also, the grandkids are there. Let's remember that. You know, Steph's wife is in the crowd and the grandkids are there. So maybe, like, go be with the grandkids. I don't know. Put your allegiance aside and go be with the grandkids.
Yeah, if I'm Steph Curry, I'm probably saying, like, look, you know the TVs are going to be showing. Okay, for the NBA Finals, can you leave your significant other? Because these are new relationships. It's not like they've been married for a long time. Steph's parents just got divorced within like the last year.
They probably met Steph once or twice. You know, like they haven't connected at all. Now you're bringing them to the game.
Yeah,
it's weird.
Can you leave them out of the game? I'm trying to win an NBA Finals. I don't want to hear about all this nonsense. People are talking to me about my parents' new boyfriend and girlfriend when they're, you know, 60 years old.
Go hang out with Riley Curry. Isn't she like, you know, she's the best, right?
Yeah,
come on, go hang out with the grandkids.
Yeah, hang with the family instead. Anyways, I just found that fascinating.
Yes.
And how quickly people discovered this online. By investigating and seeing that the two new significant others were also formerly married.
10 minutes. It was 10 minutes. That's why the internet is always undefeated. It will always be undefeated.
It's ridiculous.
Twitter is unbelievable when it comes to that, because you see something on TV, you don't really think of it, and then a commercial break, you go to Twitter, and boom, they're trending. It's like, oh, well, what happened?
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't know.
I'm a big Reddit guy. Like, if there's something, even like a big story going on, I'll go to Reddit, and the information I get from Reddit about like an investigation is so good. That I don't know what the actual investigation's like with the detective, but these people on Reddit are amazing. The information they find on certain people. Whenever I want to know anything about somebody that's getting like their 15 minutes of fame or anything, I go to Reddit. They got everything on there.
Deshaun Watson Reddit threads about his case, they are incredible. And not in a good way, but
the
information that it's unbelievable.
Oh, it's crazy what people find on the internet. And in this case, they found like a family photo of these people back when they were married and everything. It's remarkable. So anyways, that was the big story. Now, I love these guys. I've referenced them before, the Are You Garbage? It's a podcast, and it's a great podcast. And they ask questions usually to their guests to determine if their guest is garbage or not, in a fun sense. Not actual. They're not talking about actual like crimes they've committed, but just little things you do in your life. Are you classy or are you a little trashy? That's the whole idea. It's a great podcast. They go out and they do live shows, and they take questions from the crowd to determine if those in the crowd are garbage or classy individuals. When I saw this whole Curry thing, it reminded me of a story from a couple of weeks ago from the Are You Garbage podcast where somebody in the crowd had a family that went through something similar.
Is it garbage if your mom left your dad to marry your pastor? There's a whole lot more. And then your dad married the pastor's ex-wife. There's more. And then the pastor's ex-wife groomed your brother and now stepsister to eventually marry each other.
It's like a hillbilly Yellowstone right there.
So everybody's now a hunky-dory family?
I wonder why. What the f***?
That's the Curry family now. They're all getting together with the Johnson family. Crazy stuff. Hey, speaking of basketball, when we come back, we'll give our breakdowns to the new Adam Sandler film. Hustle, which is available. It's out on Netflix now. If you haven't seen it yet, we'll give our two cents when we come back. It's the Mara Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Game 5 of the NBA Finals tonight. We'll break it down, of course, tomorrow. I know the Celtics are really good coming off losses. It's hard to go against them in the spot, but just there's something about this game. I feel like the Warriors take the lead with a win tonight. We'll see what happens. We'll break it down tomorrow. But elsewhere in the basketball world, we got our latest sports movie. Now, when they release a movie about sports, we got to watch it and talk about it on the Morrow Midday Show, and we're going to do so. It's called Hustle. Starring Adam Sandler. I'm sure you've seen the commercials. It was released in theaters about 10 days ago and was put out on Netflix about a week ago. So I know it's pretty fresh, right? It's new. Maybe you haven't had a chance to see it yet. We'll certainly try to avoid anything that may spoil any significant part of the movie. But whenever you have a sports movie, right, it's not like some sort of thriller or twist ending. There really aren't spoilers. It's pretty straightforward. It is what it is. But nonetheless, we will respect the process, and we will give our take on the movie Hustle. I'll give you a brief synopsis if you're unfamiliar. Then we'll get Trent's breakdown, and then I'll give you my thoughts on the film as well. And we have our music-themed. This music may want to put you to sleep, but it's the music they use at Cinemark, there's a Cinemark theater in Somerville. This was the old music they used to play in the theater before and after the screenings. So we have our – oh, yeah. Got our movie music, like you're going to the theater. Yep. You're settling in. We're going to watch Hustle, right? You're getting excited. You're seeing the dancing popcorn. Good stuff.
Good stuff.
The movie Hustle was, as mentioned, it's out on Netflix. It follows Adam Sandler as an NBA scout, former college basketball player, wants to be a coach in the NBA. Right now he's a scout, and he discovers what they call this unicorn. He's like a 7-foot player named Bo Cruz in Spain who hasn't played organized basketball in years. And so there's a lot of skeptics around Bo Cruz, and Adam Sandler hopes that he is his big ticket. If Adam Sandler can develop this kid, Bo Cruz, to be an NBA star, right, it can turn him into the assistant coach in the NBA he's always wanted to be. That's the general idea. He discovers a raw but talented player in Spain and gets him ready for the NBA draft, hoping that this could be the big ticket of his career. Sandler's late 50s in the movie, a little down on his luck a little bit, had an injury end his playing career, so he's one of those types of guys. He's looking for his big break after grinding for years in the league, and he thinks this guy's the big break, but many people are skeptical. That's the general idea. Trent, I go to you first. We both watched Hustle over the weekend. Give me your takeaways. What stood out? Did you like it? What did you not like? Break it down for me, the movie Hustle.
Luke, I enjoyed the movie. I thought it was a good sports movie. Because honestly, in the sports movies that I've watched in the past, you know, obviously my favorite sports movie of all time is Remember the Titans. I used to watch it all the time as a kid.
It's a good one.
Even, like, obviously Denzel absolutely crushes it. The acting is good in Remember the Titans. But that's what I look at for a good sports movie. Is the acting up to par that it can be an actual, you know, maybe win some awards at some point, you know, if the acting's good? Obviously, the Sandman crushed it. I think he crushes majority of roles that he's in. Thought Ben Foster did a great job with the character Vin, the owner of the 76ers, after his, don't need to spoil anything, so I will leave it at that.
It happens
early in the film, so I can say it. 76ers owner dies, his son comes into the role as Vince Merrick, they call him Vin, but he did a great job. Kenny Smith did a great job in his role. The acting, again, it's a little up and down. I thought the players that were involved with the movie, Anthony Edwards, Boban, and obviously Hernan Gomez, the main character as Bo Cruz, thought he did a phenomenal job. It was a good sports movie, Luke. I won't say it's great. I'm not going to put it up there with Remember the Titans or any of the other classic ones that I really enjoy, but I thought it was a good movie, and that's what's most important, because a lot of people, when they hear Adam Sandler, what do they think of? Oh, it's him and his buddies. They're just out on vacation making a movie, and they kind of use it as an excuse. They'll put out Grown Ups and all that kind of stuff, and it's fine. Hubie Halloween, whatever you want. It's all, like, kitschy. This wasn't really kitschy. It wasn't. It was a true story. It kind of took you into the mind of some of the let's say, you know, because the NBA is glitz and glamour and everybody thinks the coaches have a lot of money. These scouts grind. They go out for months on end internationally, in America, wherever it is. And it was just a cool way to look at basketball in a different light with some of these players that we don't know about that are absolute stars, and they come into the NBA and they shine. So I thought it was a good sports movie. I can't break it down the way you break down films. I go good or bad. It was a good sports movie.
Ranking 1 out of 10, what would you give it?
1 out of 10? I'm not going to give it an 8. I think an 8's a guy. So I would say, we'll go decimal points here, I'd say a 7.5.
Oh,
I'd
okay.
Say 7.5.
That's good, because I was thinking maybe a 7. So
wow.
Maybe
okay.
You're a little higher than me. Okay. And that means I still like it. If I give it a 7, it's still good. Would you watch it again?
No. I wouldn't watch
okay.
it again. Yeah.
See, that's important.
It is very important, because there are some, like I said, Remember the Titans,
yes.
Invincible, that I always watch that all the
yeah.
time. What's the other one with Mark Wahlberg? Was that Invincible? No, that's Matt Damon's rugby movie. I'm thinking about a couple different ones here, but I always want to watch those again. I wouldn't watch Hustle again. If
really?
It was on, I'd probably turn it on, but I probably wouldn't watch it again.
Okay,
no.
Interesting. Who is your favorite like cameo of the basketball guys we know? Who'd you like the most?
Kenny Smith did a great job. I think
so, yeah.
he was probably the best out of all those guys. Anthony Edwards surprised me.
Yeah.
I thought he did pretty well. And I love Adam Sandler doing this. This is how you know Adam Sandler can just do whatever he wants. Just gets a bunch of NBA players, a legend like Kenny Smith, puts them together, makes a movie. Just made a movie with a bunch of celebrities, the Uncut Gems, The
yeah.
Weeknd was in it, Kevin Garnett was in it. God does whatever he wants. Just
oh, yeah.
put a good cast together to make a decent movie.
Yeah, absolutely. As you said, most of Sandler's movies now, these comedies, he just goes with a bunch of his friends and they film it at an island so they could have a summer vacation with their families. And it's just, he's like mailing it in. This one's different. This is a more serious film. He's playing a more serious role. I thought Sandler was great. Now, I've always said Adam Sandler to me is one of the most talented people Hollywood has produced in the last, I don't know, 40 years. He can do comedy. He can do serious films. If you haven't seen him do a serious role, you're missing out. Uncut Gems, of course. I would say this movie was more serious, even though his character is pretty funny. And then also, I always love Rain Over Me, which was a Sandler movie about a grieving father that came out about 15 years ago. He is so good in that movie. It tugs at your heartstrings. There's very little humor to it. It's a serious role. Sandler's great. So I think he's a talented actor. I think he's a funny comedian. And he's a pretty good musician, and he does a lot of music for his new movies. So I've always been a huge Sandler fan. I think he's one of the more talented guys. You think of the silly, you know, Billy Madison movies and Happy Gilmore, but when Sandler wants to do something serious, he's got good acting chops. So I thought Sandler was great. I also thought, for some reason, I thought Queen Latifah, his wife, was great.
Crushed it.
Yeah,
absolutely,
she was awesome.
Crushed it. I mean, well, what do we expect from Queen Latifah?
Yeah.
Nothing but success, obviously. Nothing but absolute bangers when she gets on the screen. Murdered it as his wife. It was awesome.
Yeah, because now obviously she's been acting for a long time, but she's
yeah.
another one that, you know, she was a musician. She's a good actress, and I thought she was really good in this role. I thought she was great. All right, my takeaways. I thought it was good. As I said, I'd probably give it a 7. A little cheesy. Sports
yep.
movies usually are. We had a few cheesy scenes. I mean, the genesis of the movie when he first discovers Bo and that cheesy... When you watch the movie, if you haven't seen it yet, you'll know what I'm talking about. But the cheesy, like, the guy's upset they lost.
Right.
The cheesy one-on-one, he throws the basketball at him. And then you know what's going to happen. Bo really shines in this one-on-one game against the star of the pickup court.
Big crowd around him,
yeah.
the whole thing, yeah.
I thought that was a little cheesy. That's how the whole thing gets going. That's when Sandler first, like, whoa, look at this guy. It's the classic, you stumble across a park. Some guy nobody was expecting much from is the best player there. And it intrigues, in this case, Sandler the scout. Along those lines, we have a P1 listener, Ricardo, that calls the show, who says he's the uncle of Tobias Harris. Tobias Harris was in the movie.
Right.
I thought it was a little cheesy that as Bo's playing pickup games in Philadelphia, what's Tobias Harris doing at the park?
Yeah.
Playing a pickup game.
Yeah, come on now.
That happens later on in the movie. I thought Dirk Nowitzki makes an appearance. I thought the Dirk FaceTime call, a little cheesy.
Very cheesy. That was early on. Very
yeah.
cheesy. Very cheesy.
I thought Dirk was pretty funny, but just the whole idea of let me FaceTime this guy, yada, yada, yada.
Had him as a schnitzel in his phone. I thought that was pretty funny. That was pretty funny.
Yeah, and Dirk was pretty good in that little cameo. I agree with you. I thought Kenny Smith was good, a good actor, all things considered. I thought Anthony Edwards, who's getting a lot of praise, did a good job playing. He's kind of the villain in the movie. I thought he did pretty good. And I love Anthony Edwards as a player, but watching this movie, like, I wanted to hate him now.
Yeah.
I thought he did such a good job. And I thought, oh, man, I don't want to see Anthony Edwards in this light. He seems like a fun guy. He's fun to watch. I don't want to see him be such a bad guy.
Makes a good character. Like, we're talking about it now. Yeah. It's like, I want to hate Anthony Edwards, but he's such a lovable guy on the court. It's very difficult.
Yeah, but in this movie, he was great because he was such a jerk in the film. And he did it very well that as I was watching it, I was thinking, I hate this guy. Mm. A couple of things, though. The negatives that stand out. From a basketball perspective, I thought the basketball was really good. They did a lot of drills. What I appreciate about this movie, a lot of times you get a sports film, it doesn't focus a ton on the sports. Mm, yeah. And it's a lot of the off the court, off the field, they dramatize the movie. Like, Remember the Titans, obviously a big part of that storyline are the race issues.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the idea of the movie. It's almost more of like that than a football movie.
Yeah, not a lot of football scenes outside of the games.
Right. So what I love about this was like, this was all basketball.
Right.
The amount of times they showed him just doing drills was almost like a little too much with the amount of time he was working in the gym. But it was great. So I love that. There was no secondary story of like a girlfriend or even the guy from Spain missing home. There's a little bit of the drama off the court, but not really. This was simply they focused on basketball. And I like that from my sports movies. I don't want to watch a sports movie, and it's most of it's like a sappy, tugging at your heartstrings, like The Blind Side's another one.
Oof. Yeah.
Where it's more about like the adoption than it is football. I want a good sports movie that's just about sports. Even Major League is about like off the field drama. For the Love of the Game with Billy Chappell, half the movie's about his girlfriend. No, I want just about sports, and that's what we got with this movie. So I like that. Most of the basketball, the conversations, like the X's and O's, the way the Sixers organization worked was all really good. My two complaints. Number one, Bo is like 7 feet tall. He's like a Kristaps Porzingis. What is he doing guarding Anthony Edwards the whole movie?
Yeah, that is an interesting dynamic, no doubt about it. He probably should be guarding Boban, who was in the movie earlier.
Right.
Yeah, like, come on now.
Why isn't he matched up with him?
And Boban's great. 6 foot six. Like,
yeah, he's out on the perimeter. These guys keep battling. It's a rivalry. They're battling as they get ready for the combine. They're battling in like scrimmages and stuff. And he, a lot of times, Anthony Edwards is burning him. But what do you expect? He's shorter and quicker. He's going around him. Which, on the flip side, when Bo's on offense and Anthony Edwards, again, is guarding him for whatever reason, I don't get it. He's so much taller. Why is he doing so many high ball screens to try to take Anthony Edwards off the dribble to the rim? You have like a 7-inch advantage. Post up down low on this guy. What are you doing?
I knew these would be your takeaways from the movie because you're such like an inside basketball guy that you'd be like, well, I mean, this is not even a realistic thing here. What are we even talking about?
When you have that big of a mismatch, why is he out on the perimeter asking, every time he gets the ball, he's asking for a screen and he's trying to take Edwards off the dribble. Go down low and post up on the guy. He's half your size. Ridiculous.
Yeah, they kind of depicted Anthony Edwards to be like 7 feet like on the same level as them. It was weird.
I know. And that's the other part. That becomes a big rivalry in the movie. Again, I'm not really spoiling anything. There's not a spoiler here. Him and Anthony Edwards are the rivals. Anthony Edwards is supposed to be a top pick. Why was it so important that Bo Cruz, the main character, plays better than Anthony Edwards?
Yeah.
Like, that was the determining factor. It's like, oh, this guy, he can't be in the NBA. He's not better than the number two pick we thought in the draft. Like, he could still get drafted and be a good NBA player. I didn't like this whole idea, like, it's all or nothing. If you're not better than Anthony Edwards, you're not an NBA guy. Nonsense. If you're not the best player in the draft, there's still 60 other spots for you in the draft, and you could still be a star. So that whole thing was a little manufactured. I thought the ending of the movie, I'm not going to ruin it for you, but I thought the ending was a little rushed.
Mm-hmm.
That was a little bit of a clumsy finish.
Yeah, I agree.
And the other thing I'll say from a basketball perspective is that they focused a lot on him being a unicorn, but I think his big thing was like his athleticism and his defense. So again, I go back to, I don't get the focus on like being a unicorn or even, we got a good amount of shooting, but the big thing was like his defense and these ridiculous rejections and just how athletic and long he was. So I thought like they were kind of straddling the fence, like which way are we going to go with this guy? Is he going to be this unicorn, like this offensive talent, or is it more about the athleticism and the defense? And I don't know. I thought that was almost like playing both sides throughout the movie. And I think that's I jotted down some things, so I'm reading off my notes. I think that was everything I had.
It was a good movie.
It was. Here's the other thing I'll say, and this goes for all sports movies. I always say this about sports movies. If the athletes don't look good enough, right, if the sports scenes don't look good enough, it takes you out of the film.
Yep.
So what Sandler did, or the producers, whatever, they chose in this movie, we're going to get these former, they sacrificed the acting for the acting of the actual basketball.
The realistic part of it. Yeah, they focus. Yeah, I mean, no disrespect to Kurt Warner, but watch Kurt Warner's movie and you get turned away very quickly.
Yeah. It just looks so unrealistic. You can't believe, you can't suspend your belief that, like, oh, this is an NFL quarterback. No, he can't throw football, the actor. So in this case, like, some of the acting, some of the delivery of the lines, a little rough, but what do you expect? It's a bunch of basketball guys. Dr. J, who's not a good actor. Right? Dr. J's in it. But it makes it more realistic to have these basketball guys. Two last real quick things. Number one, it was a pet peeve that he had his chain on and out of the undershirt he wore the whole movie.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I found it distracting. Every time he gets the basketball, he's got his chain out. I don't get the point of it. I wear a gold chain every day. When I play basketball, I take the chain off.
Ooh.
Because I don't want anybody yanking on it. And I never have it outside my shirt. He's playing all the time with his chain hanging outside of his shirt. I didn't get the point of that. I don't know. And the other thing, too, is the end credits were so odd. The end credits showed all these guys, these basketball players that, like, I didn't even realize were in the movie. It was very strange. Like, I don't know. I miss Luka Doncic.
Yeah.
I didn't realize Luka was in the film.
I'm sorry? What? Luka was in it?
But when you get to the end credits, they spend like 15 seconds on all these guys, and they show clips from their NBA career.
Oh, maybe it's like I don't know. Maybe it's like people maybe got advice or something. Maybe Adam Sandler talked to them, because LeBron's also an executive producer on it, so he might have talked to other NBA players about how the best way to depict, the grind is. I'm not sure.
Yeah, because they spent so much time. The credits was essentially just like a show and tell. Like, look at all these guys we got to be in the movie. Right. Half of them I didn't realize, like, oh, that guy was in the movie? And they show you like 30-second clips of him. The credits were really long, the end credits, to show all these guys they had. I didn't even know half of them were in the movie. They did one for Dave Yeager, the assistant coach of the Sixers. I didn't even know he was in the movie, just because he works for the Sixers. Adam Sandler does. Anyways, that was if I'm nitpicking, at the end of the movie, the credits, I thought it was a little bit of a show and tell. Anyways, overall, I would recommend it. If you like sports films, if you like Sandler, if you like basketball, good film. I gave it a 7. Trent gave it a 7.5. I probably would watch it again, and I was pleasantly surprised. It was probably better than I thought it would be. I enjoyed it. Our full breakdown on Hustle. Coming up, the Stanley Cup could be interesting this year in the NHL, if you haven't been paying attention. It's more Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Yo, what up?
What's the word, big fella? Everything's good on this end.
Hey, Luke, how's it going? Thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, Luke. Hey, man. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
I'm doing great, but I'm hoping you could call me Boca Baby.
Great show. You did a good job.
Hey, you're turning into rapidly my favorite person I've interviewed with, and I've done like 50 of these in the last week.
You've done your homework. I like it. I absolutely like it. I love that.
Another great thought.
You've done your homework, haven't you? Good job.
You've always getting these big stars and important people on. That's great to hear. We like to hear the interviews.
You know, it's uncanny how you do this, Luke. And I don't know how you do, because I do this gauntlet of radio on Thursdays, where I do all these different cities. Many of them need their hosts to have me give them some talking points. You hit all my talking points every week. It's uncanny how good you are.
Always great talking football with you, Luke. Appreciate you guys being right.
Very impressive.
Just want to say, I find you the low country Colin Cowherd. You use common sense with statistics, and you combine them, and you think outside the box.
Shout out to all the people in Charleston that support the show.
Tell your friends. Tell your friends.
Da 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 da. Da 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 da. Go ahead, boy. That's how you bring it on.
Is this a sports show or a dancing show?
I don't know. Sometimes I don't know what we're doing around here.
Well, it's with Luke for 3 hours. Anything goes.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Stranger in the black sedan, I want you hop inside my car. I got pictures, got candy, I'm a lovable man, and I can take you to the nearest star. I'm your vehicle, baby. I'll take you anywhere you wanna go. I'm your vehicle, woman. By now I'm sure you know that I love you.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. If you ever missed anything from the show, catch on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. And don't forget, you can take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Stream us online at charlestonsportsradio.com through TuneIn Radio, your smart speaker, or our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. Download the app today, and you can listen to the show live or on demand from anywhere in the world. Appreciate listeners checking in from at least 9 different states and multiple countries on this Monday. Game 5 of the NBA Finals tonight. We have broken down that series throughout the afternoon. The Stanley Cup Finals are getting set to go. And it'll be Tampa Bay against Colorado. So Tampa Bay came back to beat the Rangers. The Rangers were up 2-0 in the series. They were leading Game 3. Tampa Bay then swept the rest of the way. Colorado swept Edmonton. My Oilers, unfortunately, having their season come to an end. So as we get ready for the Stanley Cup Finals, right? If you haven't been paying attention to hockey, it's interesting because twofold. Number one, Edmonton lost in the conference finals, so the streak continues. No Canadian team has won the Stanley Cup since 1993. And I believe all the Canadian teams have made it to the Stanley Cup since then and still have not been able to win. So that drought continues. It'll go on to, 30 years, which is remarkable to me. But then the other side of this is now you have Tampa Bay. So Colorado's been a really offensive team. And they go up against Tampa Bay, and the Lightning, their goalie, had a pretty good series against the Rangers. That was a matchup of two pretty good goalies. But Tampa Bay is trying to three-peat, and no team has done that in the NHL since the Islanders 40 years ago when the Islanders won 4 straight. There are only 4 Stanley Cups. They won them consecutively. They used them all up at once, and now they got nothing left. But the Lightning could become the first team to three-peat in 40 years in the NHL. And the first team in all of sports in 20 years. We just had the anniversary. It was either yesterday or Saturday of the Lakers finishing their three-peat. And so it's been 20 years since anybody's done it in any sport. Right? The Yankees came close. The Yankees did do it, right? 98, 99, 2000. So baseball, the last time was 2000. The Lakers was 20 years ago. The NFL, you have to go back to about 30 years ago in the 90s or even before that. But the point being, we haven't seen something like this in sports in a long time where a team wins 3 consecutive championships, and that's what Tampa Bay will be trying to do. They have overcome a deficit in 2 of their series, and then they also swept Florida, who was the number one seed in the NHL, so it's been quite the run for Tampa. And what I find interesting about all this is the pandemic. I wonder if that actually helped something like this happen, because for the NHL, right, they had a bubble season where they were playing in one location, no travel. You know how I feel about bubble championships. And then even after that, still, like, it wasn't a normal season a year ago, and the season was a little bit shortened, and you get that time off. So it hasn't been as grueling, not as much travel, the bubble year. Not as grueling as most teams when they're trying to win 3 in a row. I'm curious if that has aided Tampa Bay. That's not to say this has only happened because of the pandemic's impact on sports. It hasn't happened in 40 years for a reason. But Tampa Bay in the Stanley Cup Finals trying to three-peat for the first time for any sports champion we've had in the professional ranks in 20 years. Tampa Bay and Colorado should be an interesting Stanley Cup Finals. Hey, the NBA Finals continue at Game 5 tonight. As I said earlier, I'm going to roll with the Warriors tonight. And I think for the first time, and maybe I changed my opinion before tip-off, but the official pick for the show is that I think the Warriors win and cover the 4 tonight at home and take a 3-2 lead. I think for the first time in weeks, first time in this postseason, first time in a long time, the Celtics actually do lose back-to-back games. But I think it should be a lot of fun. Hopefully it's as good as Game 4. I'm curious to see how big of a role Draymond Green plays tonight. Can Jason Tatum bounce back? I think he will after Game 4. Can those role players help out? Can the role players like Al Horford step up? And what about the Warriors? Can Wiggins have another big game like we saw from him Friday? Can Klay Thompson knock down some big shots once again? We'll see. Game 5 tonight. We'll break it all down tomorrow. Game 5, of course, it's always the huge swing game. So there's none bigger than tonight for the NBA Finals. Hey, if you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. In the meantime, life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we say goodbye. We'll say hello again tomorrow at noon. It's the More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.